We are going to start this session reading the Heart Sutra that is on page 76. And then after the reading of the Heart Sutra, that will follow with about 15 minutes silent meditation. And as I mentioned yesterday, during that 15-minute silent meditation, the main purpose of the meditation is to enhance single-pointed mind, stability, mind which has qualities of stability and the clarity. And I will not lead the meditation. You know, it seems most of you are very I'm sure have done this kind of meditation to cultivate a single-pointed mind. So after the Heart Sutra reading, we'll stay in silence for the cultivation of single-pointed mind. One thing it seems I forgot to tell you last night is it will be extremely helpful for all of us to keep silent at least until lunchtime. Really, that will be very, very helpful for all of us. Even after lunchtime, you know, if there are something you need to talk, that will be fine, but to try to reduce talking Coronation Street or those things. I'm not saying the television, but the Coronation Street.
Yes.
So try to avoid those meaningless subjects. If there are something important things need to be said, that's fine. So at least very strictly until lunchtime, you know, not keep silent. Okay? Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we are going to read the Heart Sutra with the atmosphere of the presence of the Buddha in front of us and all those great teachers that we have imagined here in front of us. So with that atmosphere, then I will read the Heart Sutra. I prostrate to the Honorable Chan. Thus did I hear the long time. The Bhagavan was dwelling on the most virtuous mountain, in right gear together with a great community of monks and a great community of bodhisattvas. At that time, the Bhagavan was observed in concentration on the categories of phenomena called profound succession. Also at that time, the bodhisattva Mahasattva Ayurvedicara looked up on the very practice of profound professional wisdom, and beheld those five aggregates also empty of inanimate nature. Then through the power of Buddha, the Venerable shared the truth, said this to the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Ayurvedicara. How should any son of the lineage trained who wishes to practice the activity of profound professions of wisdom? He said that Bodhisattva Mahasattva Ayurvedicara said this to the Venerable Shariputra. Shariputra, any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom should look up on that face, correctly and repeatedly beholding those five aggregates, also empty of inanimate nature. Form is empty, emptiness is form, Emptiness is not other than form. Form is also not other than emptiness. In the same way, feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness are empty. Shariputra, likewise, all phenomena are emptiness, without characteristics, unproduced, unceased, standards, and above understanding, not deficient, not fulfilled. Shariputra, therefore, in emptiness there is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no compositional matters, and no consciousness. No vision, no eye, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind. No visual form, no sound, no odor, no taste, no object of touch, and no known. There is no eye element, and so on, after, including no mind element, and no mental consciousness element. There is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so on, after, including no aging and death, no extinction of aging and death. Similarly, there is no suffering, origination, cessation, and power. There is no exalted wisdom, no attainment, and also no non-attainment. Shariputra, therefore, because there is no attainment, Bodhisattva, renowned, dwell in professional wisdom, the mind without obscuration and without fear, having completely passed beyond error, they reach the end point of Nirvana. All the Buddhas dwell in three times, also manifestly, completely awakened, unsurpassable, perfect, complete enlightenment, in a reliance on professional wisdom. Therefore, the mantra of professional wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge, the unsurpassed mantra, the mantra equal to unequal, the mantra that thoroughly pacifies all sufferings, should be known as truth, since there is no fault. The mantra of professional wisdom is declared. Dayata, gate, gate, para gate, para samgate, bodhisattva. Shariputra, bodhisattva, mahasattva, should train to learn professional wisdom as development. Then the Bhagavan rose from concentration, commanding the Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, Aya Abhutrishara, saying, well said, son of the lineage, it is like that, it is like that. One should practice the profound professional wisdom, just as you have indicated. Even the Tathagatas rejoice. The Bhagavan having thus spoken, the Venerable Shariputra, the Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, Aya, Avalokiteshvara, those sounding in the eternity, along the world of gods, humans, asuras, and gandharvas, were overjoyed and highly praised and spoken by the Bhagavan. This class will last until 10:30. Then we'll have tea break. That means a little bit more than an hour. And that might be quite long to continue. And if that becomes too long, then we'll have some short mind recitation in a form of resting. And we'll see how it goes. Now, the first thing that I would like to say this morning is this. Our intention being here and to join this retreat ideally that intention should have long-term purpose and also short-term reasons. In the short-term reasons, of course, you know, the coming days, weeks, months, and years be more peaceful, more relaxing, or more joyful. That we all would like to have, and that we all deserve to have. You know, nobody sort of wants, you know, the very distracted, very, you know, the turbulent, very difficult lives. And, you know, nobody deserves like that kind of life. Everybody, you know, entitled and deserves to have peaceful, joyful, and, you know, the happy life. And there's nothing wrong to practice Dharma and, you know, the any kind of, I think you can say, any kind of religious activity. And in here, we are following the teachings of the Buddha. There's nothing wrong to have that kind of aim, to have, you know, a peaceful, joyful, happy life. You know, but that is the short-term goal, short-term aim. You know, and it is very, very useful and helpful to try to include in that, try to include our intent, you know, the intention being here, or the reason being here, and to participate, you know, these classes, meditations, recitations. It is important to include long-term, you know, the goal. And particularly here, when you follow the teachings of the Buddha, that a long-term goal should be, you know, there, somewhere in the background of our intention being here. If that is not, at least not in a background, if it is possible, forefront of our intention being here and to join the activities, at least in the background. If that intention, our long-term purpose, long-term, you know, goal, is not in our intention being here, then, you know, even if you are, you know, talking about attaining enlightenment, or talking about some kind of profound philosophical views, and so on and so forth, you know, they may not be, you know, may not go according to the, you know, the complete, you know, holistic, the sets of the teachings of the Buddha. So what I mean here, I mean, you know, the in our intention being here to participate in these activities should include, at least in the background, should include oneself, initially oneself, free from dukkha and origins of dukkha. Not just day to day, of course those are important as I said, but also complete, you know, the complete free from dukkha and the origins of dukkha should be there in our, although that might be very, very long way, you know, for many of us that might be in a just, you know, what's called in a aspirational level, or in a just, you know, the aspirational level, but still it is important to try to include in our intention being here. Then, you know, also try to include, you know, that as we set the intention this morning in the first session, you know, try to include well-beings of others. Of course, then again, well-beings of others, that means their immediate needs, and that are also very, very useful, important, try to support, but also try to include their long-term well-beings, you know, the others' long-term well-beings, that is also free from dukkha and the origins of dukkha. And, you know, that should be in our, you know, at least in our background of our intention being here. And, you know, every now and then during the class, during the post, you know, during the break time, try to remind ourselves my being here to join this, you know, the gathering, although, you know, to enjoy this amazing place, and now today is a really nice day, that is also important, but try to include some of those things and try to remind ourselves. In that way, our activities, whatever we do, will become meaningful and long-lasting, you know, there will be a long-lasting results or the effects. So I would like to, you know, suggest that at the beginning of the class. Because of the nature of the class that we are going to, the text that we are going to read, subject that we are going to discuss, if we try to remind ourselves our being here is not just immediate sort of fulfillment, something long-term fulfillment, and the fulfillment of oneself as well as for many, many living beings, then we will not bog down by the subjects. You know, the other ways, you know, the reading texts and the topic emptiness may, instead of, you know, give us more, what you call, the enthusiasm, it may knock us down. there's a high possibility in that. I want to warn you that. Oh, yeah. So now, the first, why this topic, the emptiness, is so important to be understood, to be realized, and eventually to that understanding, and understanding of emptiness become part of our everyday, the way of perceiving the things and events, from the banal day-to-day things and events up to our long-term, aspiration, that is to experience enlightenment, that realization of emptiness become that part of our daily way of perceiving the things and events, including day-to-day as well as enlightenment. And the main reason is this. As some of us read the Tsongkhapa's Essence of True Eloquence, and at the beginning of that text, Essence of True Eloquence, Tsongkhapa made right at the beginning of that text, after the paying homage to some of those great Indian masters, and his own teachers, then the first verse after the quotation, after the paying homage to those masters, Tsongkhapa made a quotation from a sutra, and that is the something which is very important for us to remember, and that is the reason why understanding of emptiness is so important. And I will read that four lines. The way is empty, peaceful, and uncreated. Not knowing that, the living beings wander. Moved by compassion, he introduces them with the hundreds of reasons and the technical procedures. And that's how it is translated. So that is the verse. Comes from one of the sutras. And this empty, peaceful, uncreated. These are quite technical terms, but in reality, that is, what is happening in our everyday lives. In our everyday lives, when we encounter a thing or an event, we encounter the thing or the event in these three different ways. Either the thing itself, say an object like the table, or the causes of that thing, either we encounter with that, or we may encounter result of that thing. So in other words, thing itself, the causes that things in that, things bring into existence, and the results of that thing, that whatever it produces, So our interaction in our day-to-day lives, from the common or the day-to-day activities or the things, as well as our wishes, yearnings for the future, when our minds, thoughts, emotions interact with them with these three different different things, either the things itself, or the causes of that thing, or the result of that thing. And that's what here, saying that not seeing them, not realizing them, in these three perspective, or in these three different, angle, and the things itself, and cause, and the result, as there are, not here the term is used, not knowing that, you know, the knowing, you know, the things itself is empty of inherent existence. The causes of that thing is also empty of inherent existence, and the result of that thing is also empty of inherent existence. Not knowing that, you know, then we are living beings wander, you know, the wander in the sense of we are in the, you know, birth, aging, sickness, and death, you know, the one after another, without any sort of choice, without anything that we can say when we want, where we want, how we want, you know. So that's the meaning of wonder. So that is here, the very nicely, you know, summarized in here. And end of that verse, you know, what says, moved by compassion, he, the Buddha, introduces them, you know, with hundreds of reasonings. In other words, emptiness of the things itself, emptiness of the causes of the thing, and emptiness of the result of the thing. You know, when he says he introduces them in that plural sense, them in the sense of the entity, the thing itself, the causes, the results of that thing, with the hundreds of reasons and technical procedures. In Tibetan, hundreds of reasons. And this one is something quite important to say a few words. With the hundreds of reasons. Jetsongkhapa's time, you know, the Jetsongkhapa's time in Tibet, you know, the 14th century, Jetsongkhapa had seen, you know, there is a particularly in the religious practitioners, there is a element of moral, ethical declining at the Tsongkhapa's time. And he saw, you know, he had seen that by two main or several different reasons. And one of the reasons is what, which is relevant in here, is, you know, the unable to interpret, interpret some of the Nagarjuna and Aryadev's presentation of emptiness, you know, unable to interpret properly or very, you know, with the reasons, unable to interpret, you know, properly and with the reasons, some of the Nagarjuna's texts on emptiness and, you know, Aryadev's, his disciple Aryadev's text on emptiness. And in certain extents, you know, become more literal, you know, literal, just to take a literal, you know, the explanation of emptiness. And, you know, more or less, you know, saying the day-to-day things, day-to-day events are not real, not existence. It's like illusion, not like illusion. It is day-to-day things are illusion. and you know, not real. And because of that, Tsongkhapa says there is a moral decline, in the particular in the religious, you know, the religious circle. There are some other reasons, and this one is quite important. This sutra, with hundreds of reasoning. So, in certain extents, you know, the developed during the Tsongkhapa's time, there is a strong anti-reasoning, anti-reason, you know, and it has a, you know, some connection with the, you know, the introduction of the meditation by some of the Chinese tradition came to Tibet, you know, the, along the 8th or 9th century. Although Kamalashila, you know, had managed to, you know, the debate and, you know, historically that's how it's presented, you know, the and defeated that Chinese, you know, the one of the meditative tradition which strongly spread in Tibet, widely spread and strongly spread in Tibet, which Kamala Shila saw very, you know, unproductive, very anti-reasoning sort of tradition. You know, the Tsongkhapa's time, even though that tradition was, you know, by the Kamala Shila, you know, the during the first dissemination Buddhism in Tibet, but it, the Tsongkhapa's time, although that was more than 400 or 500 years ago, but still there is an element, strong element of that type of meditation. Is meditation or the tradition is quite spread, well spread, and that creates this kind of anti-reasoning tradition. And Tsongkhapa says that is very danger, that is very unhealthy for the cultivation, you know, particularly in the practicing morality or the ethics. And that is something quite important for us to remember, that, you know, the meditation is important, no doubt. And the meditation of, you know, calm abiding, calm, relaxing, you know, the peaceful mental state is very, very important. But that type of meditation should not create obstacle for the cultivation of, you know, the reasoning type of meditation. You know, the reasoning type of meditation in, or at least not to create a anti-reasoning. You know, that's what I thought is quite important at this stage, anti-reasoning. So that that's why I thought it's good to just to start from our, you know, the, this first session to start with that. So now I'm going to go to the Middling Lamrim, which is also similar, you will see later, similar points are made by Tsongkhapa. So yesterday evening, the first session, Rush briefly to explain that, you know, out of the two prerequisites, that Tsongkhapa had explained, you know, the at the beginning of the this section, special insight section, you know, the and out of the two prerequisite or favorable condition to cultivate shamatha, which I will not repeat again. If you read that section, that is from page, you know, the one to follow up to page three, those are something quite useful, you know, particularly while we are here, you know, to have plenty of time. There's no mobile connection, which is great, you know, so try to have spend time to read. I rush this because, you know, there aren't that that important things which are not very clear, need more, you know, and need there, you know, further explanation. One just brief I want to draw your attention is on page 2. On page 2, that second, that subtitle, you know, the subtitle, which is saying that, however, page 2, however, although the Master Chandrakirti asserts that external objects exist conventionally, so now this is relevant, particularly people who are joining with me reading the Essence of True Eloquence. You'll see the some of the detail that we have read and that we are going to read in the Essence of True Eloquence coming months and years. Here we'll see glimpse of those important things in a summary. So in this paragraph, here just on cover, have it, this is, however, although the Master Chandrakirti asserts that external objects exist conventionally, he does not do so in the in comparison with another tenet systems. So this is, as you know, the assertion of existence of external phenomena, is as a whole is within the within the Buddhist philosophical masters, it is relatively common, but what Jason Kava is saying here, Chandrakirti's assertion of existence of external phenomena, you know, here conventionally, is not the same as some of the other Buddhist masters who assert existence of external phenomena. So bring one master's name which is relevant in the, not necessarily right here, but in general people who are studying the, you know, the Essence of True Eloquence. That is Bhavavika and Chandrakirti both agree existence of external phenomena, way in which they assert, you know, the manner of existence of external phenomena is very, very different. So I'll repeat that. These two masters, both are middle way schools masters, Bhavavika on the one hand and Chandrakirti on the other hand, both assert existence of external phenomena, but manner of assertion of existence of external phenomena, there's a big difference. And that's what here Tsongkhapa is clearly in this short statement. He's saying he does not do so in comparison with another tenet systems. So I'm just giving you one, just therefore, it is not suitable to call him Svatantrika Madhyamika, that he assert external objects in this next one is another the last sentence, that he asserts, in this case Chandrakirti, assert external object in accordance with Babashika, is also not feasible. This is the one thing which Babashika, why it comes here, it is this. Some of the Chandrakirti's assertion, like for example, rejecting of existence of self-cognition, Rangri, rejecting of existence of self-cognition is, similar to Babashika. Babashika also reject that, but how to reject the existence of self-cognition is different between the Chandrakirti and the Babashika school's masters. So in this paragraph really captures some of the most, short paragraph, which quite interesting how it put it in this short paragraph by Tsongkhapa. So not that important for the our today's this retreat meditation, but useful to bear in mind, or put a note in your text. Maybe will become useful for the reading the Essence of True Eloquence. Okay, now if you turn your page, which I want to look at briefly, then move to today's reading. That is in the second paragraph in page 3. And this is what this paragraph demonstrates Tsongkhapa's, his own, what kind of master, Indian master, that he is going to follow. What kind of Indian master that he is going to follow. In the previous paragraph, Chandrakirti, Tsongkhapa explains Chandrakirti, this great Indian master, six or seven century Indian masters, how good the Chandrakirti is, or how accurate or how detailed the Chandrakirti's explanation on Nagarjuna and Aradev's texts. Also, Chandrakirti has had a disagreement, some of the points had disagreements with the Baba Bhikkha, but also Chandrakirti take into account, taking into board some of the Baba Bhikkha's, philosophical points. So this previous paragraph in the same page, the first paragraph is summarizing, if I summarize that meaning of that paragraph, giving the how Chandrakirti, according to the Tsongkhapa, Chandrakirti's interpretation, explanation on Nagarjuna and Aryadev's emptiness texts are very clear, accurate, detailed, it's amazing. Also, Chandrakirti had some disagreement with the Baba Bhikkha. By the way, you should bear in mind, Chandrakirti, as I said, is 6th or 7th century master. Baba Bhika might be the 4th or 5th century, and Nagarjuna and Ayadev end of 1st or early 2nd century. So there is this time, you know, the gap, but we are talking about how Jasongkhapa is reading Chandrakirtis, you know. Then this main paragraph, before this big heading, and here the Jasongkhapa is saying, you know, his presentation coming on the subject of emptiness is closely going to follow Chandrakirti. And that's what he said here. Because of commentaries by these two masters, that is Buddhapalita and the Chandrakirti, are seen to be very highly developed with regard to explaining the text of superior father and his spiritual son, Nagarjuna and Ayadev, here. So then that's what Jasongkhapa himself is saying here. Here, their thought will be delineated following the master Buddhapalita and the Chandrakirti. Yes, there are sources, but mainly Jasongkhapa closely follows Chandrakirti's text, and that you will see coming readings. So the from now on, you know, the emptiness that is presented, nature of I, self that is presented, by the Jasongkhapa is very much closely based on Chandrakirti's texts. There are several Chandrakirti's texts that we will see. So that's up to here, more like the yesterday, which I briefly rushed on that section, which is useful you to read again, as I said before. Now, this heading, the root of cyclic existence, from here is the second, you know, the prerequisites to cultivate vipassana, to cultivate special insight. Second and the most important prerequisites from here. It goes quite further, quite long way, you know, the second prerequisite. And that is what in Tibetan, here you can see the presentation of how subtle the view in particular. So this is the, you know, the in order to cultivate, in order to have develop vipassana, you know, the special insight, that realization, first the practitioners or the individuals should, you know, establish the right view. Without establishing the right view, there is no vipassana meditation can be done. And it is very similar if you look at this Easter retreat at Accor, you know, when we read some of those texts, that is very much related to, you know, the Mahamudra part of that kind of, you know, the, or the Dzogchen, or, you know, whatever term that we use. Before meditate on nature of mind, first, all these texts, first, there is a section, Tawatena Papa, that means establishing the view. Some of you may recall that I was reading that section in that retreat in April. So first establish the view, then meditate on the nature of the mind. And it is the same in here. First establish the view, then meditate on vipassana or the insight. You know, and that is what here Jasongkhapa put this section, quite a long section, you know, as a prerequisite, as a favorable condition to cultivate vipassana. Sometimes these outlines, although the outlines, some of these in the small writing outlines are not by Jetsun Karpa his own writings. These are added much, much later. In fact, you know, the here, as you can see, in the cover with the supplementary headings by Tejang Rinpoche, one of the His Holiness Dalai Lama's, you know, the tutors, junior tutor Tejang Rinpoche, he added some of these outlines, you know, the small printing outlines. And these outlines, both outlines, Jetsun Karpa, his own outlines, and added those outlines, headings are very, very useful to understand, you know, the because otherwise some of the, you know, the anyways, helpful to understand which second, what is explaining in this particular paragraph or paragraphs. So in this under this heading, the root of cyclic existence, this is the heading added by the translator. It is not in the actual Tibetan text. Now the Jetsun Karpa, his own words, in saying that he, Jetsun Karpa himself, you know, explained this under three headings, the second prerequisite. The first heading is identifying affliction, afflicted ignorance. And that is really, now here, I want to take you to the morning when I was briefly leading the refuge, and that is relevant to all the time whenever we practice the Dharma. Whenever we practice Dharma, this heading, you know, the identifying afflicted ignorance, under this heading, the topics that we are going to read are very, very relevant. If we have a difficulty, or if we haven't identified the afflicted ignorance and its functions and its consequences, then very, very difficult, very, very difficult to have profound yearning to be free from dukkha and origins of dukkha, particularly the origins of dukkha. You know, we may have, you know, the yearning, longing, be free from some of those challenges, difficulties, you know, the sufferings. But, you know, if we do not understand the seriousness of, you know, this afflicted ignorance, we may not have yearning, be free from this mind, this ignorance. If we do not have, you know, deep yearning to be free from this afflicted ignorance, then, you know, it is difficult to say. It is difficult to say from our heart we have, you know, the genuine or sound, you know, the yearning to liberation. you know, enlightenment. There's a strong connection, very strong connection. So that this first, you know, under this first outline, which is very, you know, what we are going to read, is very, very useful. If we see that, then it is quite automatic, it is quite natural, you know, the yearning to have understanding of emptiness. You know, the yearning to have understanding of emptiness is that yearning will come quite sort of what you call the natural. You know, it is like the similar to a person who is walking in a desert and his or her water, you know, supply is running out. And then, you know, desire to have more water is very obvious, very natural when he sees the supply is running out and he or she is in the middle of desert. And here it is the same. When we see, when we realize the seriousness of this afflicted ignorance, then, you know, to search for solution to uproot that ignorance is quite, you know, what you call the natural. So this that's why it comes as a prerequisite, that realization, that understanding comes as a prerequisite in the understanding cultivation of vipassana. Then the second outline, showing that it is the root of revolving in cyclic existence, and that's what we already talked, we will see that. Then the third one is the wishing, to abandon the conception of self. Conception of self should seek the view of selflessness. So I've just mentioned those things, those three, in under just the first outline. So this section, I see this section is a very, very important one under this, you know, this section. If we are able to, you know, get a good grip on this part, you know, under these three headings, or, you know, the what you call, we will not struggle. We will not struggle. Why do we need realization of emptiness? You know, realization of emptiness. Okay, that is the just brief explanation on the, you know, the... The three major outlines. So we have 15 minutes. I think we are able to continue. Yeah, I will do that instead of reciting mantra. Now the under this first outline, Jetsun Kagwa's first outline, identifying identifying afflicted ignorance. Under this outline, Tujang Rinpoche has put you know, the several sub outlines. I will not read those sub outlines, you know, the one by one. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give a brief explanation, you know, page under page 3, where the sub outline is saying identifying afflicted ignorance. Then here, you know, a few sub outlines are added by the Tijang Rinpoche. So here, the first part of under this outline is really very much saying, you know, in the teachings of the Buddha, and the subsequent those teachers, you know, there are many different solutions are taught for the different distorted mental states, you know, such as attachment, anger, jealousy, envy, and so forth, you know, to counteract these individual afflictions, Buddha and subsequent Buddhist teachers have, you know, come with the different solutions. But these, you know, solutions are simply to counteract, or certain extents to ease the surface of some of these, you know, these distorted mental afflictions, such as anger, jealousy, envy, for example. You know, the meditation on love will take, you know, counteract anger and so forth. But these are not the solution. These are not the solution for the root of the problem, these distorted mental states. And the root of the, you know, solution for the root of these distorted mental state is the, you know, the understanding of emptiness. And that's what these, under the this Chandakirti's clear words, where Jitsongkhapa make that quotation, and which is quite nice. Don't know in English, in Tibetan, it is very nice to say those lines, you know, and so forth. So I will not go any detail with that. And then in the page 4, here what we will see. What we will see in the page 4, the first paragraph, and that is something quite useful to look at that one. It says this: ignorance is opposite of knowledge. So here, this paragraph is really trying to explain what kind of ignorance that we are talking about that is important to be identified. What kind of afflicted ignorance that we are talking about. So ignorance is the opposite of knowledge, but knowledge should not be taken as just any knowledge. Rather, it is the wisdom knowing suchness, selflessness. So we are talking about ignorance which is opposite, the mind which is opposite of, you know, that kind of wisdom realizing selflessness. So we are talking about ignorance, or we are talking about distorted minds, you know, the mistaken mind, which is complete opposite of mind which realizing selflessness. So these two mental states, on the one hand, you know, the mind which realizes selflessness, and complete opposite of that mind is, we are talking about ignorance, grasping or apprehending the things and events have a self or true nature or intrinsic nature or inherent nature. And that is what here we are talking about, ignorance, and that's what this is saying. Its opposite is not suitable to be just non-existent of it or just other than it. Hence, its opposite is its contradictory equivalent. That's what here is talking about. Not, you know, here when we say the afflicted ignorance is referring to a particular type of ignorance. What kind of particular type of ignorance we are talking about? We are talking about, you know, the complete opposite of the wisdom realizing emptiness. So what is that complete opposite of wisdom realizing emptiness? That is the mind which is grasping, or which is holding, or which is apprehending that things and events have intrinsic, inherent, or inner, true, or ultimate nature. So I'm giving you all those lists because here, as I mentioned right at the beginning, in this session, from now on, Tsongkhapa's presentation is following the Chandrakirti's presentation. According to Chandrakirti, inherent, intrinsic, ultimate, true, these all have the same meaning. Or self, doubt, these all have the same meaning. Although, like Bhava Bhikkha, some of you know this well, may disagree, putting all these intrinsic, inherent, ultimate, true, self, putting all these into one, Bhava Bhikkha will disagree with the Chandrakirti. But Chandrakirti sees these all carries the same meaning, the same property. So in that case, what here, and that's what important to bear in mind. So then the next one, these 2.5 lines, which is quite useful. Again, particularly people who are reading, the essence of true eloquence. And it, I'm drawing your attention, because here we will see in a very short, a glimpse. When you read essence of true eloquence, then we will see relatively quite detailed. Now in here, in this next paragraph, what we will see here is Tsongkhapa is saying two graspings. Grasping of person. Self-grasping of person. Self-grasping of person and self-grasping of phenomena. Two graspings. Yeah? The self-grasping of person and the self-grasping of phenomena. Both are, both are afflicted ignorance. Both are afflicted ignorance. Self-grasping of person and self-grasping of phenomena, both are afflicted ignorance, which again, Bhava Bhikkha will strongly disagree with this. Chandrakirti's presentation, saying that both self-grasping of person and the self-grasping of phenomena, both are afflicted ignorance. Yeah, afflicted ignorance. In other words, if we put it in another, explain in another way, somebody who wants to experience liberation, not enlightenment, liberation, self-liberation. If somebody who wants to be free, who wants to experience self-liberation, free from cyclic existence, he or she should overcome both graspings, according to Chandrakirti. Because according to Chandrakirti, both graspings are afflicted ignorance. Bhava Bhikkha say self-grasping of person is afflicted ignorance, however self-grasping of phenomena, isn't. Okay? I'll repeat that. Bhava Bhikkha disagree with the Chandrakirti version view. Bhava Bhikkha will say, self-grasping of person is, you know, the afflicted ignorance, however, self-grasping of phenomena isn't. Self-grasping of phenomena is, according to Bhava Bhikkha, obscuration to attain enlightenment is not, self-grasping of phenomena is not obscuration to attain liberation. It is obscuration to attain enlightenment. And these four, two and three and a half lines are really just Jetsongkhapa giving us a summary of this. That ignorance is a superimposition of self. Furthermore, it is the two superimpositions, you say it like that?
Yeah.
Superimpositions of self of phenomena and self of person. I say self-grasping of person and self-grasping of phenomena. Therefore, both conceptions of the self of phenomena and conception of self of person are ignorance. So that is here, you know, something in the particularly, you know, yeah, so that's one thing it is important, useful to remember. Now, from here, we are going to read, based on some huge, you know, several quotations by Jetsongkhapa, and this is the Jetsongkhapa's style, which is, when it comes to important section, he gives quite lots of references from the Indian masters, and now is the section where Jetsongkhapa is going to explain, you know, the manner of self-grasping of person and self-grasping of phenomena, or here the term is used, conception of a, you know, of a self or person, and the conception of a self of phenomena and a person. Or I'm more familiar with this grasping. So how our self-grasping of person, you know, apprehends ourself, I, you know, the self or I, the how our self-grasping of person really apprehends or grasp, holds the I or the self or the person. So in this case, I'm using those three, I, self, and person, or individual. You know, they in Tibetan, nga, da, kibu, kangsa, they all are synonymous. That is the, you know, the pronoun, that person, I, self, you know, the person, individual, whatever term that you use. And that is what here. And these coming quotations, and based on the quotations, Tsongkhapa's explanation hopefully will give us, you know, this ignorance, so-called afflicted ignorance. How that afflicted ignorance, you know, apprehends our self or the person or the individual, the manner of apprehension. And that is really, really important. You know, if we understand that the manner of apprehension of the this self-grasping of person, then we are ready to investigate whether that is accurate or not. You know, if we do not have, you know, if we do not have understanding of manner when which this self-grasping of person in apprehends the self, then it is very, very difficult to argue it is wrong. It is a mistake. You know, and that is what here it is important. And, you know, so we'll leave it here at the important part to have tea. Yeah. Thank you. So we'll come back at 11.